Chapter 35, Northern Nepal. Sam opened his mouth to speak, then clamped it shut. Remy said, "I know what you're thinking. But I'm sure, Sam. I remember drinking tea and staring at these characters on Jack's laptop screen." "I believe you. I just don't see how." Sam stopped and furrowed his eyebrows. "Unless, when we landed here, how far were we from the last set of coordinates?" "Hosni said less than a kilometer." "Maybe a half mile from the path Dakal would have taken on his journey. What if he died near here, or ran into trouble and lost the Thurang chest?" Remy was nodding. "And then our balloonist friends come along centuries later. They crash land here and find the box. When was the earliest manned balloon flight?"
"Just guessing. Late 16th, early 17th century. But I've never heard of a dirigible from that period as advanced as this one. This would have been way ahead of its time."
"Then, at the earliest, it crashed here almost 300 years after Dakal left Mustung."
"It's plausible," Sam admitted, "but hard to swallow."
"Then explain these markings."
"I can't. You say they're the Thurang curse, and I believe you. I'm just having trouble wrapping my brain around it all."
"Join the club, Sam."
"How's your Italian?"
"A bit rusty, but I can give it a try later. Right now, let's concentrate on getting out of here."
They devoted the morning to checking the guy lines, setting aside those that looked too frayed or decayed. These Sam cut away with his Swiss Army knife. They repeated the process with the wicker and bamboo struts, all of which Remy checked for engravings but found none, then turned their attention to the silk. The biggest piece they found was only a few inches wide, so they decided to braid the usable fabric into cordage should it be needed. By lunchtime, they had a respectable pile of construction materials. For added stability, they decided to fasten 8 of the dirigible's balloon cage struts to the interior of the dome. This job they accomplished in assembly line fashion. Sam, using his knife's awl, poked double holes in the canopy where each strut was to go, followed by Remy inserting 12-inch lengths of sinew thongs into the holes. Once done, they had 320 holes and 160 thongs. By late afternoon, Sam began cinching the thongs closed using a boom hitch. He'd secured almost a quarter of the thongs when they decided to call it a night. They were up with the sun the next day and returned to the dirigible's construction. During the 5 hours of usable afternoon light, they turned their attention to sewing closed the mouth of the parachute balloon with strips of silk knotted around a barrel-sized ring Sam had fashioned from curved pieces of wicker. After savoring a few crackers each, they retired to the gondola cave and settled down for what they knew would be a long night.
"How long until we're ready?" Remy asked.
"With luck, we'll have our basket ready by late morning tomorrow." As they labored, Sam had been working and reworking the engineering problem in the back of his mind. They had slowly been cannibalizing the gondola for firewood, which they used not only to cook, but to occasionally warm themselves throughout the day and before going to bed at night. As it stood, they had 10 feet of gondola left. Based on Sam's calculations, the remaining wicker combined with the chemical concoction he had in mind would be enough to get them aloft. Much less certain was whether they could ascend high enough to clear the ridgeline. The one factor Sam was not worried about was wind. So far, what little they'd gotten had come from the north. Remy voiced yet another concern, one that had also been nagging at Sam.
"What about our landing?"
"I'm not going to lie. That could be our bridge too far. There's no way to tell how well we'll be able to control the descent. And we'll have virtually no steering."
"You have a plan B, I'm guessing?"
"I do. Do you want to hear it?" Remy was silent for a few moments.
"No. Surprise me."
Sam's timetable estimate was close. It wasn't until noon that they had the basket and risers completed. While basket was an overly optimistic word for their construction, they were nevertheless proud of it. a 2-foot-wide bamboo platform bound together and secured to the risers by the last of the sinew. They sat and ate lunch in silence, admiring their creation. The craft was rough-hewn, misshapen, and ugly, and they loved every inch of it. "It needs a name," Remy said. Sam, of course, suggested the Remy, but she dismissed the idea. He tried again. "I had a kite when I was a kid called High Flyer. I like it." The afternoon was spent implementing Sam's scheme for a fuel source. Except for a 3-foot section in which they would huddle that night, Sam used the wire saw to dismantle the remainder of the gondola, cutting away as he stood inside it and handing up chunks to Remy. They managed to lose only 3 pieces to the bowels of the crevasse. Using a stone, Remy began grinding the wicker and the remaining sinew into a rough pulp, the first palmful of which Sam dropped into a bowl-shaped section of the bell's aluminum skin. To the pulp, he added lichen they'd scraped from every stone and clear patch of granite they could find on the plateau. Next came dribbles of aviation fuel, followed by dashes of gunpowder Sam had extracted from the pistol's bullets. After 30 minutes of trial and error, Sam presented Remy with a crude briquette wrapped inside a swatch of silk. "Do the honors," he said, and handed Remy the lighter.
"Are you sure it won't explode?"
"No, not at all sure." Remy gave him a withering stare. He said, "It would have to be packed inside something solid." At arm's length, Remy touched the lighter's flame to the brick. With a barely perceptible whoosh, it ignited. Grinning broadly, Remy leapt up and hugged Sam. Together they sat crouched around the brick and watched it burn. The heat was surprisingly intense. When the flames finally sputtered out, Sam checked his watch. 6 minutes. Not bad. Now we need as many as we can make, but bigger. Say, about the size of a filet mignon.
Did you have to use that analogy?
Sorry. The moment we get back to Kathmandu, we'll head for the nearest steakhouse. Buoyed by the success of their ignition test, they made rapid progress. By bedtime, they had 19 bricks. As the sun began to set, Sam finished the brazier by notching into its base 3 short legs, which he then attached to a double-thick aluminum bowl by crude flanges. As a final step, he cut a hole into the side of the cone.
"What's that for?" asked Remy.
"Ventilation and fuel port. Once we get the first brick going, airflow and the shape of the cone will create a vortex of sorts. The heat will gush through the top of the cone and into the balloon."
"That's ingenious."
"That's a stove."
"Pardon?"
"It's an old-fashioned backpacking stove on steroids. They've been around for a century. At last, my love of obscure knowledge pays off."
"In spades.
Let's retreat to our bunker and try to rest up for the maiden and final flight of the High Flyer." They slept fitfully for a total of 2 hours, kept away by exhaustion, lack of food, and excitement. As soon as there was enough light to work by, they climbed out of the gondola and ate the last of their food. Sam dismembered the remainder of the gondola, save the last corner, which they pried free with the piton and knotted rope. Once the sawing was done, they had a pile of fuel that was as tall as Sam. Having already chosen a spot on the plateau that was virtually free of ice, they carefully dragged the balloon to the launch pad. Onto the platform, they stacked ballast rocks. In the center, they placed the brazier, then secured it to the platform with sinew thongs.
"Let's get cooking," Remy said.
They used wads of paper and lichen as tinder, on top of which they placed a tripod of wicker chunks. Once they had a solid bed of coals, they continued to feed wicker into the brazier, and slowly flames began licking upward. Remy placed her hand over the brazier's flue. She jerked it back.
"Hot!"
"Perfect. Now we wait. This is going to take a while." 1 hour turned into 2. The balloon filled slowly, expanding around them like a miniature circus tent as their fuel supply dwindled. Beneath the canopy, the sunlight seemed ethereal, hazy. Sam realized they were fighting time and thermal physics as the air cooled and seeped through the balloon's skin. Just before the 3rd hour, the balloon, though still lying perpendicular to the ground, lifted and floated free. Whether reality or perception, they weren't sure, but this seemed to be a watershed moment. Within 40 minutes, the balloon was standing upright, its exterior growing more taut by the minute.
"It's working," Remy murmured. "It's really working."
Sam nodded, said nothing, his eyes fixed on the craft. Finally he said, "All aboard." Remy trotted to their supply pile, snatched up the engraved length of bamboo, slid it down the back of her jacket, then jogged back. She removed rocks one by one until she had room to kneel, then sit. The opposite side of the platform was now hovering a few inches off the ground. Having already stuffed the emergency parachute pack with some essentials, and the duffel bag with their bricks and the last armload of wicker, Sam grabbed both, then knelt beside the platform. "You ready?" he asked. Remy didn't blink an eye.
"Let's fly."